This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Vayishlach. And of course, Yaakov Avinu is getting ready to go back to Eretz Yisrael and to face his confrontation with his brother Esav. And of course, as he gets ready to do so, he takes his wives and his Achad Asar Yeladav, his 11 children, Vayavor Es Mavar Yabok. He crosses over Mavar Yabok. Now Rashi notes that Dina was hidden in a box in order to protect her, and it was this act that led her to later being taken by Shechem. And the question has to be asked as to why that was. So we recall Shechter having mentioned to us in Shira at one point in time that the Mesilas Yesharim says you have to have Zahiris, but you can't be too Zahir. You can't exaggerate too much and separate yourself too much. In other words, Shechter suggested you have to have a balanced chinuch for your children, meaning that you can't give them a sheltered life that's too sheltered without letting them know about what's going on out there. If you do so, in the end, they get trapped in something. Shechter added that this is what happened with Dina. Yaakov tried to protect her, but putting her in a box was too extreme. And when you give your child a chinuch, you shouldn't expose them to everything in the world. But they should know that there are things in the world that are terrible, and that we don't do them. But if they have no idea about them at all, then they could end up getting trapped and messed up by them. So the lesson of Adina is that she needs to be able to understand there are certain things to do. And in our lives, sometimes we find our children, they're so sheltered, they break out the other way because they never knew anything was a problem. What could be wrong? They never were exposed to hear that this is not a good plan. Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, the Torah tells us that Yaakov wound up alone. What's the nature of the struggle of Yaakov with the Malach? And why is he starting up with Yaakov? What's up with the Malach over there? So, you know, there's a famous Rashbam, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky also highlights it, that Yaakov's instinct was to run away. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky even points out, if I recall correctly, that he actually did try to run away. Rav Avinir writes that there are three ways that people approach a challenge, and that Yaakov's initial reaction was flight, but that the Malach stopped him to teach us that we can't run away, we have to confront our challenges. And Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Sachs writes that that's why Yaakov asked for a bracha. He asked for something positive to come out of the challenge. And so he got the bracha. Lo Yaakov ye'omer o tshimcha kiyam Yisrael. Your name will no longer be Yaakov. And the Gemara in Brachos says that one is never permitted to call Avram simply Avram after the name change. But yet, when it comes to Yaakov, you can refer to Yisrael as Yaakov. And why is there such a distinction? So Rabbi Baruch Simon Shalita quoted from the Divrei Chaim of Sons, who explained that because Yisrael is a different name from Yaakov and a person doesn't have the ability to completely break with his or her past, we can call somebody Yaakov and Yisrael separately. Avram and Avram are one and of the same. And so therefore, Avram and Avraham, it's really a question of an improved version, an improved and more corrected situation, as we see in the Gemara in Nedarim, which we just had in the Daf Yomi, that when Avraham took rule over the five continued pieces of Eves Avarim, he went from being Avram, Avhamon Goyim, to Avraham, with the five included inside. We're told why. Ki sarisa im Elokim ve'im anashim. That you struggle with the divine and with men. Vatuchal, and you were successful. So Rashi explains, who were the anashim? And he says the answer was Lavan and Esav. Now how did Yaakov overcome Esav? Right? After all, if you think about it, he sent him presents, he bowed down to him, he called him his master. That seems to suggest somebody who's screaming uncle that he lost. So what's pshat? So my friend Rav Mata Stern, the Mashgiach in Yeshiva Sper Yitzchak, quoted Rav Moshe Soloveitchik of Switzerland, who explained that while on the surface it appeared that Yaakov gave in, from the overall perspective, Yaakov wanted to see to it that Esau shouldn't harm him, and simply should leave him alone, which he achieved. Rav Matas added that when we deal with Shalom Bias, we often get caught up in pettiness about how many times we gave in. But that's being narrow-minded. And the main thing that we should have is that there should be Shalom, there should be harmony in the home. And when one achieves that, he's definitely the winner. He might have lost this particular battle, but he won the war. And so if this is the case, in reality, he didn't lose anything. For one who achieves Shalom Bias is definitely in the category of Yisrael. What is Yisrael? One who has successfully overcome. And so we're told, Alkein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael eskid ha'nasha, therefore b'nei Yisrael shouldn't eat gid ha'nasha. Now why do we choose to memorialize the struggle of an angel with a negative commandment not to eat gid ha'nasha? And why is it not a positive commandment? And so Rav Moshe Feinstein answers that as great as it is to withstand nisyonos, it's even better if there was no nisyonos at all. As we say every morning in Birchas HaShachar, Shalom Navo Lidei Nisayon. And so a positive commandment would be the message that we embrace the Nisayon, whereas a negative commandment gives us the message that we don't want challenges. Ruvain Vayishkavis Bilopi Legish Aviv elsewhere in the Parsha, we get to this very strange pasuk that causes a lot of problem. Ruvain went and he slept with Bila, and Rashi notes that since he switched the beds, is treated as though he slept with her. And why did he do it? So Rashi explains that he was concerned about Elbon Imo. He was worried about his mother's embarrassment, which leads the late great Lakewood Mashgiach Rav Nosson Wachvogel to ask, well, if that's the case, then how do we explain why Yaakov reacted the way he ultimately did? After all, he was only concerned about his mom. Why do you get so upset about it? Ki Alisa Mishkevei Avicha. Why did he curse him? And so Rav Nosson Tzvi Wachvogel answers that Yaakov only married Bilhah and Zilpah on the insistence of Rachel and Leah. And thus Bilhah and Zilpah were, in his minds, just extensions of the bond of devotion that he had with Rachel and Leah. And so if he couldn't be with Rachel physically because Rachel didn't exist because she died, he felt obligated to honor her by honoring the bond via Bilhah. Yaakov never intended on lowering Leah's status. He intended on maintaining it along with that status of Rachel. And by not checking on that, Reuven erred. And that was his mistake, says Rav Nosson Tzvi Wachvogel. We're also told, Elah told us, Esav hu Edom. Esav is Edom. You know, Rabbi Lamb noted that as opposed to Yaakov, whose own name was changed to Israel, Esav stays as Edom. The equation of Esav to Edom is symbolic of the static of one who has arrived, one who experiences no development or growth, of one who has no place to go. Yaakov's the opposite. Yaakov's a straggler. He follows Esav out of the womb and into life. He hangs on to his brother's heel, and hence his name, Yaakov. He's hesitant, he's defiant, he's backwards, his insecurity and weakness plague him all his life. And that's why he always struggles. He struggles with the Malach, and as a result of the encounter, he changes his name to Yisrael. Ki sarisa melokim ve'em anashim batuchal. The name Yisrael doesn't incorporate the word batuchal, that you are successful, the concept of triumph and victory, but rather the concept of struggle, the sarisa, the idea that you struggled. And so the identification of Yaakov in Yisrael symbolizes development, growth, progress, the good fight to grow and to transcend oneself. That's what we're all about, right? So Esav hu Edom, this is who I am, that's it, goodbye and leave me alone. Yaakov Avinu is always adding. Finally, in the Haftorah, we read the entire book of Ovadia, which sounds like a very large undertaking, except for the fact that the entire book of Ovadia is one parak. And, of course, in it, you know, we deal with our struggle, our eternal struggle with an eternal struggle with Edom. And we're told, Ubahar Tzion tiyeh pleita, on Har Tzion there'll be a refuge. You know, in 1933, when Hitler rose to power, the Chafetz Chaim was asked about the imminent danger, and he responded that when Esav tries to attack one camp, and we have always Esav el ha-machaneh ha-achaz v'iko, b'ya ha-machaneh ha-neshar lefleita, the other one will be around as a refuge. And so when he asked where that refuge would be, the Chafetz Chaim quoted our pasuk implying Eretz Yisrael, Ubahar Tzion tiyeh pleita, that's where the other one is. And certainly as we know it, the war changed when Rommel tried to cross into Eretz Yisrael. And this point is made in the Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah. Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel added that we learned that this parsha speaks to the future as well. And similarly, the history of Bnei Esav is enumerated to show us that the Torah is not a history book. The Haftorah is not a history book. Rather, it teaches us that in every generation we're going to confront Esavs, and we'll do our best, we'll do ourselves best by approaching the generation's Esav in the same way as the original one, with the gifts, the preparation, and prayer that will make sure that we will be successful in defeating the threat from the outside. Esav doesn't change. Esav makes it his business to look and act a certain way, but we will grow. We'll continue to be strong. We'll grow stronger, louder, harder, and Be'ezus Hashem, we will be successful in the process. Wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom to all.